Mrs. Houdini, the 0 hour has passed. The 10 years are up. Have you reached a decision?
Yes. Houdini did not come through. My last hope is gone. I do not believe that Houdini can come back to me or to anyone. After faithfully following through the 10-year Houdini compact, using every type, medium, and seance, it is now my personal and positive belief that spirit communication in any form is impossible. I do not believe that ghosts or spirits exist. The Houdini shrine has burned for 10 years. I now reverently turn out the light. It is finished. Good night, Harry.
Hey everybody, welcome to episode 21 of the 13 o'clock podcast.
Man, getting up there, 21.
I know, I still can't believe we're on 21 already.
Seems like we just started this.
I know. It's been a few months. But while we're on that subject...
Yeah, why don't you thank the network?
Yes. We wanted to thank Project Entertainment Network, on which our audio version is hosted.
Yeah, podcast.
Yeah, the podcast. He can't remember words. Yeah. We've had kind of a lot of downloads on there.
Yeah.
Since we moved over to the new network.
Yeah, it seems like downloads doubling each month.
Yeah. Which is good. So thank you guys, the ones that listen to us on Project Entertainment Network. And while I'm on the subject of them too, I wanted to mention, I think I mentioned it last week, but they have a Patreon and I'll link to it on the YouTube video. But, on the audio version, just go to Patreon and it's Project Entertainment Network and you'll find it and, throw them a couple bucks. It's, good for us, good for the whole network, good for all the other awesome podcasts that are on there.
Eventually we'll start our own Patreon probably when the show gets bigger.
Yeah.
I would think so.
So more people listen.
Yeah. It's funny because like on the YouTube, on our YouTube show, we'll have comments. Boy, this show should be getting thousands of hits. Be patient. Okay. We're very patient. And what you're seeing on YouTube doesn't always match up with what you see on the podcast download. You'll see a show like, for instance, Dr. Price's show that we have from Biblical Mythology, that's getting like almost 4,000 hits. Which is a lot for a little show like ours. It's getting like 4,000 on YouTube. But then you look at the download, or excuse me, the podcast, and it's maybe in the hundreds.
Yeah.
But then you'll see another one of our shows, like a good example would be, like, remember the one about the radio?
The spy one we did about the number stations and install woman and stuff.
Yeah, number stations didn't look like it did too well on YouTube. But you look at the podcast, and that was like one of our top shows.
Yeah, a lot of people downloaded the audio version.
So there's a lot of differences between our YouTube fans and our iPod. Man, why do I keep saying that?
I don't know, man.
It's because I just woke up.
Yeah, well, several hours ago. Several hours ago.
It takes forever to wake up.
It takes a long time. Yeah, I know. But, yeah, we were just saying because generally we just kind of do shows about random shit that we like, that we find interesting. We hope that other people find it interesting too. Like, we don't really go around picking subjects based on what we think other people will like. We just do shit we are interested in and that we want to talk about. And we may
not even be real experts.
Yeah, it's cool shit that we like.
And we're going to present it to you guys. Like, sometimes we'll get some real brainiacs on there, some of the serial
killer. On the YouTube comments.
The serial killer fanboys. Oh, wait, no, there's a new book out. You guys are wrong. And we don't really care. We're just presenting the general consensus of what that case was about.
And we're just having a good time shooting the shit about it because it's something that we're interested in.
And we encourage the audience that if we present something that you find interesting to go out and go study more of it on your own.
Obviously we're not the be all end all. We don't know. It's like I do research for these podcasts, but most of the time it's pretty freewheeling. I mess shit up all the time. I know.
And to really cover some of these subjects would take 8 hours.
Right, and it's only an hour show.
It's only an hour show.
So, you know. So you have some of y'all simmer down.
Yes, yeah, simmer.
Most of y'all are cool, though.
Settle down, you.
But the ones, yeah, the ones that you know who I'm talking to.
They just got them in every
pipe crowd. Down. Yeah, there's always one.
All right. Yeah, you're smarter than us. Move along.
Yeah, okay. Okay, you happy now? You happy now? All right. Anyways, so, you know, speaking of topics that I have been wanting to do this subject, this was one of the first topics that I wrote down.
This is going
to
be a good show.
When we first started about doing a podcast. I've been wanting to do this one for a while, and I said, I'm going to have to do a lot of research about this one. So I did some research about it. If I'm wrong, I'm sorry. To all the little smart asses out there.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, I've been wanting to do this one for a long time. And this one is about Harry Houdini.
Yeah.
And specifically, it's about Houdini's kind of run-ins with the paranormal, with the spiritualists.
A lot of people don't know that Harry Houdini kind of did his own paranormal investigations on the side.
Yeah,
because Harry Houdini, the paranormal investigator.
Yeah.
And it turned out he ended up being a debunker because he couldn't find the real deal.
Yeah.
All right. And go ahead. It's an interesting story.
Obviously, Harry Houdini's most famous for being an illusionist, being an escape artist. Still very famous, even though it was the early 20th century.
Yeah.
But in the years before he died, he became very interested in spiritualism and seances and mediums and things like that, later in a debunking capacity.
Yeah.
Now, the interesting thing about Houdini, he was obviously trained as a magician, and he was a skeptic, but he was a skeptic in the classic sense of the word, and that had he seen evidence that spiritualism was correct, that the dead could really talk to the living, then he would have believed it. He wanted to believe it.
Yeah.
In fact, the whole reason that he got interested in spiritualism and seances in the first place was because in the early 1920s, his mother, Cecilia, died. And Houdini had been very, very close to his mother.
Right.
He adored his mother. And her death was a huge, devastating blow to him. And he initially started going, you know, contacting mediums and going to seances and things like that because he was hoping to get a message from her. Now, what he wanted, now, his kind of criteria was he wanted one of the mediums. He said, I will know that the medium is really talking to her if the medium can tell me what her last word was before she died.
Yeah.
Her last word was forgive.
Okay.
And he went to mediums, he went to seances, and no one could ever tell him that word. So after a while, he became disillusioned and also angry because he felt like these people were taking advantage of people's grief.
I think this is a good time also to like give a background for the times, you know, to some of the younger audience members.
Yeah.
This gets back to almost kind of like we were talking about the Nazis and the occults and the Thule Society. This is pre-internet. People used to damn entertain themselves with seances.
Yeah.
They didn't have really clubs to go out to, you know, nightclubs. there wasn't a whole lot to do. So spiritualism became a big fad.
It was a big fad.
And it was all in, throughout all the Western world, actually, as far as I know.
And it had actually started in the late 19th century, around the 1840s.
Yeah.
It actually started among the Quakers.
Yeah.
And it got a big, it was bolstered a lot by the very famous Fox sisters. We might do a show about them at some point. Who were supposedly mediums that could communicate with spirits via a series of knocking.
Yeah, most people believed this
stuff. And people did believe it. And that was kind of the fulcrum that kind of started the whole spiritualist movement. Now, you know, like I said, we might do a show about the Fox sisters, but spoiler alert, many years later, they admitted that the whole thing had been a fraud.
Yeah.
That they had been producing the knocks by clicking their toe joints.
Yeah.
They could click their toe joints really loudly.
There were generations and generations of people that grew up, lived, and died believing in spiritualism.
Yeah.
parallel to their religion, like Christianity. It was a mirror image of Christianity. It ran right
along. And there are like actually a few pockets of spiritualists left. And as a matter of fact, we're in Central Florida in Orlando. Not far from here, there is a community called Casadega. And it's a spiritualist community. Yeah. There's all mediums and stuff. I've only been a couple of times.
I would say almost Christian Science would probably be almost
Yeah, it's a similar kind of thing.
And Scientology.
Similar kind of thing. but yeah, so... So Houdini, like I said, he was open to the possibility. He wanted it to be true. But because he had kept going to the seances and, you know, he was a trained magician, so he could see how these mediums were achieving these tricks. Because most of the tricks were very simple.
Right.
You know, the seances were usually attended by people who wanted to believe that they were talking to dead people. And the seances usually occurred in the dark. Which meant that, you know, the mediums could, you know, move things around when no one could, because no one could see them, or they had accomplices that were hidden in the house and whatnot. They were usually very simple tricks. Mm-hmm. And Houdini could see right through them, so he became very disappointed and disillusioned. And like I said, he became angry with them because he felt like they were taking advantage of grieving people.
Yeah.
And giving them false hope that they would be able to communicate with their loved ones when they were really just defrauding them.
Yeah, it got to the point where he was publicly vowing to destroy spiritualism.
Yes.
Forever. Yeah.
And honestly, I mean, the last, he still did his magic act like in the last few years of his life, but most of his time was taken up with debunking mediums. And he would tour around the country. And he would show slides of mediums, and then he would explain how they had done this trick and how they had done that trick. And, you know, it was getting to the point where spiritualism was kind of going down the tank because he was kind of making them a laughing stock. He was showing how they were doing all their tricks. And he would also, like in some of his later shows, he would actually replicate a lot of the tricks that, you know, some of the more famous mediums were doing, and he would do them on stage. And this tour that he did where he did that was like a huge success, like just sold out shows, and they had to add shows.
I'm not real sure on the dates. Did he know anything of Edgar Casey?
You know what? I don't know. Houdini died in 1926, so...
When was Casey around?
God, I don't even remember. Man, you just pulled something out of him and was like, man, I don't know.
Okay.
I don't have time to check it. Yeah, he did. Shut up, man.
Making us look dumb.
Well,
I just thought of Edgar Casey because he would have been a spiritualist.
Yeah.
Basically.
Similar kind of thing.
Yeah.
So basically, you know, so he goes around debunking mediums. Now, I wanted to talk a little bit about the most famous one that he debunked.
Go ahead.
So Houdini, Scientific American magazine at the time, they asked Houdini about, you know, investigating mediums, and they kind of got together on it. And Houdini said, well, I want to start a committee, you know, a scientific committee. We can offer a cash prize for any medium that can actually, you know, talk to the dead. We're going to investigate it. And if we determine that they're genuine, then we will give them the money. Now, obviously, no one ever got the money.
Right.
But in the 1920s, Houdini was out on tour. Mm-hmm. And the other guys on the Scientific American community. And these were not slouches.
Mm-hmm.
It was two guys from the Society for Psychical Research. One guy was a physicist. They were scientists, these dudes. But scientists, you know, that's good, but they weren't magicians.
Right.
Like I said, Houdini was a magician.
Yeah, a magician can boggle the mind of a scientist.
Yeah, he knew. I mean, he made his living doing these kind of tricks that these mediums were doing, and he could recognize how they were done. So he was out on tour, and the rest of the committee had become very impressed with this particular medium named Mina Crandon, probably better known as Marjorie. Now, the guys from the Scientific American community had investigated her. They'd gone to about 20 seances, and they thought she was legit.
Okay.
And they were going to give her the money.
Really?
But Houdini, when he heard about that, he was super pissed.
Yeah.
He's like, you cannot give her the money. I have not investigated her. You guys are doing this shit without me.
Right, yeah.
And there was another thing, too. And this is very funny. I read this in, there's a really good site about it. I don't know where it is now, but it's all about Houdini. And it's kind of got all the stuff about his life. Now, Mina Crandon, she did not take any money for her services because she was married to a very, very wealthy surgeon named Leroy. So she didn't need the money.
Right.
But it turned out that Mina Crandon was actually, she was a very pretty woman.
Uh-huh.
36 years old, flapper. She had the bobbed hair and she had real pretty eyes and all this other kind of stuff. Now, when she did her seances, she would come out dressed in a see-through kimono.
Okay. All right.
So, you know what I mean? And and they said her husband was kind of her manager.
I got you.
And he would show, like, people that came to the seances, he would show them, like, naked pictures of her.
Okay.
Like, you know, having ectoplasm coming out of her, out of her nose and her mouth and out of her vag.
No.
So there was obviously some kind of weird shit going on there. Now, also.
But they were charging money?
No.
Some kind of weird sexual fetish.
That's what I'm kind of saying. That's what it kind of sounded like. That's what it kind of sounded like.
Yeah. Okay.
So yeah. And so it turned out also the Crandons had a really, really nice house.
Okay.
And the seances that they gave were always at their nice house.
Uh-huh.
And so all these Scientific American guys who were all saying, yeah, she's a real medium. She can really talk to dead people. You know, they had been looking at pictures of this chick's vag and hanging out in their really, in their palatial home and eating all their nice food and everything like that. So, you know,
like bribery.
Kind of.
Yeah.
It was kind of like that. So Houdini was kind of pissed off.
All right.
And he said, well, he said, I'm cutting my tour short.
Okay.
And I am coming out there to investigate her because you guys are this.
Yeah, he's not going to stand for
this
that.
This is bullshit.
Okay.
So he comes out there and he goes to the first seance, 1924 it was, in summer. And he had done some investigation into the way she did her seances. And he said, okay, I know that her husband always sits to her right. Mm-hmm. And whoever the guest of honor is always sits to her left, which will probably be me.
Okay.
And he kind of had an idea of how she was doing her shit. Now, her shtick was she had, as many mediums did at the time, she had a spirit guide. Mm-hmm. His name was Walter. Okay. And he was supposed to be the spirit of her dead brother, who was actually crushed to death in an industrial accident like many years before. And so that was who, you know, would bring the spirit messages or whatnot. Right. And they also did things like, you know, standard seance shit. It's like, oh, ring a bell and throw a horn and all this other kind of crap.
Right.
So Houdini kind of had an idea of how she might operate. So since he figured that he was going to be sitting on her left, he took his leg and he put a bandage real tight around it so it swelled up. So it was like really sensitive, the skin there.
Right.
On the day of the seance. So by the time he went to the seance, it was like real swollen. And he sat right next to her on the on the left. Now all the lights went out and everything like that. Now Walter comes through her trance and whatever. And, you know, Houdini's like, okay, now ring this bell or whatever that was, that was on the floor, like under the table. And he clearly felt her leg move, like come out from the bonds and ring it with her feet.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. And then, and then they were like, okay, we, there was this like horn, like a megaphone. And, Walter, quote unquote, asked Houdini, where do you want me to throw it? Houdini said, we'll throw it at me.
Yeah.
So, you know, the horn did come at him. The megaphone did come at him. Later, he figured out that because the room was dark, all she had done was got one of her hands free when no one could see her, put the horn on her head. And then when he said, hey, throw it at me, she just, threw her head, you know, she threw her head forward and threw it at him. He didn't tell this to any of the Scientific American people at the time.
Right.
But at the end of the seance, all he told them was, I've got her. She's a fraud.
Right.
And they were like, how dare you, sir? It's like, she's awesome. And all this other kind of crap. Now, on the next seance, he actually built a box and made her sit in it. Only her head was sticking out and her hands.
Yeah.
And he put everything inside the box. Unsurprisingly, at that seance, nothing happened.
Right, yeah.
And so he thought that that was the end of it.
Right.
But the Scientific American guys were still convinced.
Vag is a powerful weapon.
I guess so, especially when ectoplasm is coming out of it. But they were still, and there was a huge, And there was like a huge argument like between them.
Yeah.
So, because they still wanted to give her the money, and Houdini's like, what are you talking about? She's obviously a fraud. And then there was just all kind of this crap. And they kept having more seances.
Yeah.
Because the Scientific American guys were like, no, we, you see, it's like we're having all these more seances and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
You know, but she did other stuff like the table would rise. Houdini found out that she was just sticking her head under there, well, lifting it up with her head.
Did he eventually defrock her for
Here's
real?
What's weird. He kind of did,
mm-hmm.
but in a way it almost ended up not mattering.
Yeah.
Because what ended up happening, and okay, now here's the weird thing though. Now reportedly, as they did more seances, because she still wanted the money, some of the Scientific American mm-hmm. Committee wanted to give her the money, but Houdini didn't want them to, so they were fighting. And so like, they kept having more seances, but at one of the seances where nothing was really happening,
mm-hmm.
Marjorie, through like her spirit guide, Walter, started cursing Houdini out, said, I'm going to curse you. You're going to die soon.
Okay.
And all this other stuff. And now reportedly later in the press,
uh-huh.
in August of 1926, Walter apparently said, Houdini will be gone by Halloween.
Uh-huh.
And Houdini did die Weird. On Halloween of Weird. That year. So I don't know if that's true, though.
Yeah.
But reportedly, Walter did curse him
yeah.
and say he was going to have a short life, and specifically said he was going to die.
That prediction could have been inserted after that's Houdini's
what I mean.
Death.
That's what I mean. That could have been inserted so yes. it looked more impressive.
Yeah.
Now,
predictions are always more accurate when you're predicting something that already
happened. That already happened. Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, the thing is, her, you know, she still had a lot of defenders, even though many years later it came to light that actually one of the Scientific American guys who had been on yeah. the committee was helping her, was
oh,
like
really?
An accomplice.
Yeah, they were going to divide the money.
Yeah, that's yeah, what yeah. I'm thinking. Now, she never did get the money. They no, never okay, did yeah. get her money. Now, she kind of descended into alcoholism
yeah.
later on. But like I said, she still had defenders.
Right.
You know, she was still married to a rich guy, so it's like right. it didn't really matter to her, I guess. But spiritualism was kind of on the wane by the time she died in 1941.
Okay.
So, you know, her reputation, not so great at the end.
Right.
But, you know,
she died pretty young then.
Yeah, she did.
Yeah.
She was only 36, I think, the yeah. when...
okay, so she was about 60.
Yeah, yeah. So... Yeah, in the 1920s, she was 36. Okay. But, you know, so now the case of Marjorie was actually kind of the straw that broke the camel's back also between Houdini and Sir Arthur Conan Doyle.
Yeah, tell us about this.
Now, part. Should I take a break first? Because that's kind of a long story.
Well, you got probably about 10 minutes.
All right. So, like I said, this kind of spelled the end of their friendship. However, their friendship had been getting kind of tense in the years before the whole Marjorie debacle.
Well, tell us how these two met, Sir Arthur Conan.
Well, they actually met in the 1920s. Now, right. as most people will know, famously, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle was a big advocate of spiritualism.
Yeah, and he was a writer.
He was a writer, mm-hmm. and his wife was a medium, also, right. Lady Jean. And, despite this...
Now, he wrote Sherlock Holmes.
He did, yeah.
Right.
He did.
Yeah.
Now, in his later years, he didn't write as much because mm-hmm. he got so into spiritualism that he started touring the world.
Okay.
Like, lecturing about how awesome it was and, yeah. and all this other stuff. So, so he was big into it. Now, you wouldn't think that him and Houdini would have got along. But they actually kind of did. Houdini kind of admired him because, you know, even though he thought spiritualism was false, he said, well, here's an intelligent person that's into spiritualism that can defend his beliefs, even though I disagree.
Okay.
And Arthur Conan Doyle actually kind of admired Houdini's debunking of mediums, but not for the same reason that Houdini was doing it. Arthur Conan Doyle said, oh, well, we need to get rid of the fraudulent ones so the real ones can rise to the top kind of thing.
That's good thinking.
Yeah. Now, I mean, Houdini thought they were all frauds.
Right, yeah.
But Arthur Conan Doyle didn't really think that. But he admired Houdini. He's like, well, you're getting rid of the shitty ones.
Well, Doyle's figuring, if some of them have to be real.
Yeah.
Eventually, we'll just get rid of the fakes and the real ones will be there. And that'll prove it to the world. Right.
And I mean, they used to, like I said, they had actually a very good, there was a lot of mutual respect. I mean, they had arguments, but, you know, they respected each other's viewpoints. Now, Houdini was kind of adamant in trying to show Arthur Conan Doyle that all of these, you know, all of these things that these mediums were doing could be replicated by a magician. But that kind of ended up backfiring because Arthur Conan Doyle was so into, he so believed in spiritualism that he's like, even if you can show me that every single trick can be replicated, that doesn't mean that it's still not real, that these people can't really do it just because you can do it by physical means. But the funny thing is, him and a bunch of the other spiritualists that he knew, like in his circle, they actually thought that Houdini was a medium.
And was
and that he didn't really know it, or that he didn't want to tell anybody.
Didn't want to tell anybody, yeah.
The Arthur Conan Doyle actually publicly said,
Houdini's a medium. Huh?
That the reason that Houdini could do all these, because many years before, Houdini had kind of become famous for going around the country and challenging police departments to lock him up in their most inescapable cell, and he would get out. Like he said, I can get out of anything. I can get out of leg shackles, anything. Now, Arthur Conan Doyle publicly stated and actually believed that Houdini could do this because he could dematerialize his body and then materialize again somewhere else.
Cool.
Now, obviously, Houdini was a magician. It was a trick.
Yeah.
All he did to escape from those, one, there were only so many different kinds of locks and prison cells at that time period. He researched all of them.
Right.
He had keys and lockpicks for every single one. Right. He would research the place where he was going before then and take the correct lockpicks. Yeah. Now, most of the places, he would be stripped naked and he would be searched.
Yeah.
But what he would do was his wife, Bess, would put the lockpick in her mouth.
Uh-huh.
And then before he was put in the cell, she'd kiss him for good luck and slip it in there with her tongue.
Right.
And then he would just unlock him. So he was quick, obviously, and he was really, you know, flexible.
Right.
So he could get out of anything.
He was a little guy, too. Wasn't he?
Yeah, he was about 5'5".
Yeah.
So, you know, there was nothing, there was no trick about, you know, it was just a trick. He wasn't dematerializing.
It wasn't a trick, it was a plan.
Yeah.
Yeah, an escape
plan. Like I said, it was a lot of research. Yeah. He did a lot of research to figure out how to do all this stuff, and he trained himself how to do all these things. But Arthur Conan Doyle just would not have it.
Yeah.
He thought that Harry was really a medium, and that that was why he was going around debunking all these other mediums, was because he didn't want anybody to know that that's how he was doing his shit. Right? And nothing would convince him otherwise.
That's a creative way of looking at it.
Right? I know. Yeah. So Houdini, like I said, he kept trying to convince. He's like, look, what can I do to convince you? He's like, check it out. Okay. So he says to Arthur Conan Doyle, he's like, I will show you that I can do, like, in a trick, all this kind of shit that you're seeing at seances. And I'll tell you it's just a trick. So, okay, Doyle says, okay. So Houdini, he gives Arthur Conan Doyle, like, a slate, like a chalkboard or whatever. Doyle hangs it on a wall in his room.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Houdini says he has 5 cork balls.
Mm-hmm.
And he tells Doyle, you pick one of these, you put it in that white paint.
Yeah.
Okay? Now he's like, you take a piece of paper. You take that piece of paper. You can go wherever you want to. You go outside this house. You can go walk around the block, whatever. And he's like, and you write something on that piece of paper with that paint.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, and then you fold it up, you put it in, and then you come back. So Doyle, he takes the cork ball with the paint on it. He takes the piece of paper. He goes 3 blocks down the street, like around the corner, shit like that. He shades the paper.
Yeah. So no one can see it.
Yeah. And then there's somebody in the back in the house, like guarding Houdini. So Houdini didn't follow him or nothing like that. So he writes something on a piece of paper. He folds it up. He comes back. And then Houdini tells Doyle. Doyle gets back to the house and he says, now take that paint, that white ball, dip it in the paint. Now just set it on that slate. Mm-hmm. So Doyle sets it on the slate and the ball starts to move on the slate and it spells out
the word,
what Doyle wrote on the paper. Oh, I didn't know about that. And Doyle flipped the fuck out.
Of course, yeah.
But Houdini said to him, he's like, it's a trick.
Yeah.
But he's like, you know, him and the other, and Doyle and the other guy that were there were like, well, how did you do it? He's like, Houdini's like, I'm not going to tell you that. I'm a magician. I'm not going to tell you how I did the fucking trick. But that put Houdini like in kind of a bad position. He's like, well, I can't tell you how I did the trick because I'm a magician and you don't do that.
Right.
And, but he's like, all I'm telling you is it wasn't supernatural.
Right.
I did it.
I wonder how he did that.
And here's, but the weird thing is, I read that no one has been able to replicate that trick.
Did it really happen or did somebody make up a story about that?
I don't know. That's what I'm saying. This was something that this was one of the early, the attempts that Houdini made to try to show Doyle that all this, that seemingly magic things could be done. I mean, I have seen other magicians do that kind of trick.
Yeah. That's weird, though. You have a cork ball and it spells that. So that means there's no way you could use a magnet.
Yeah. And actually, Houdini had done tricks like that previously, like in his previous, you know, career, similar to that.
Yeah.
So, I have no idea how he did it.
Man.
But he wouldn't tell anybody. Cause like I said, he's a magician. They don't tell. Yeah. They don't tell.
That's blowing my mind. I almost didn't think that happened. I can't accept that. You know what I mean? As a mortal man, it's hard for me to accept that.
It is a pretty freaky trick.
I'd have to see that myself.
It is pretty freaky.
I'd have to see that for myself.
But apparently that's how the trick worked.
But that would have been a badass trick.
That was a good trick. Yeah. But like I said, that shit kind of backfired because Doyle was like, there's no way you could have done that.
Right.
If it wasn't like supernatural, if it wasn't magic. So it, you know, like I said, it didn't have the desired effect. Okay, so.
Not a good time.
Okay, now we're going to take a break. And when I come back, I'm going to talk some more about Arthur Conan Doyle and, you know, the kind of thing that really kind of messed up their friendship.
Yeah, don't skip these commercials.
This
is a free show, people.
We need commercials. We have sponsors that we have to, okay? So, here we go. So we'll be back in just a few minutes.
Podcast, Dead Sexy Podcasts. I'm your host, Armand Rosamilia. Fridays exclusively on Project Entertainment Network, where I interview authors, publishers, editors, artists, filmmakers, narrators, the lady from Walmart, whoever I feel like talking to. That's every Friday, Armcast, right here on Project Entertainment Network.
If you're into cosplay, corsetry, steampunk, gothic, or rockabilly clothing, shoes, and accessories, then you must visit Subculture Corsets and Clothing, either online at www.subculturecorsets.com or drop by their store at the Avenues Mall in Jacksonville, Florida, located a half mile off I-95. Tell them you heard their ad on Project Entertainment Network and the 13 O'Clock Podcast and receive a 10% discount off your entire purchase. Or when checking out on their website, use the discount code 13O'Clock and receive a 10% discount on your entire order. And if you're a full-figured girl, don't worry. Subculture carries sizes 4 through 4X, and they have men's clothing as well. That's subculturecorsets.com, and use discount code 13O'Clock for a 10% discount. Go check out their website now, subculturecorsets.com, or when traveling through Jacksonville, Florida, stop in and check out their store at the Avenues Mall.
Bizarre! It's Bizarre, the Bizarre and Weird Fiction Podcast, hosted by me, Mr. Frank. Bizarre is the showcase podcast of the bizarro fiction genre. And those who write weird and read weird are going to love this podcast, where each week we talk to everyone who is anyone in the bizarre and weird fiction realm. So join us here every Monday, presented exclusively by Project Entertainment Network.
There are terrors, real and imaginary, and I write about them all. Paranormal nonfiction, horror fiction, the Rochdale House Poltergeist, the Mammoth Mountain Poltergeist, the Associated Hopeful Monsters, Red Menace, the Ten of Poisons, Bellwether. Go to www.jennyashford.com or search Amazon for the Jenny Ashford author page.
Arthur Conan Doyle.
Yeah.
Now, so, like I said, kind of a contentious friendship a little bit, but it was still okay at this point. Although, like I said, Doyle believed Houdini was magic. Houdini was trying to convince him otherwise.
It was a bromance.
It kind of.
It was a bromance.
But it went sour.
It went sour, yeah.
And the way it went sour, and this is actually kind of a sad story, but so Conan Doyle was on one of his lecture tours, and while he was on one of his lecture tours, he was in, you know, the same area as Houdini when Houdini was touring around. So, you know, Conan Doyle and his wife, Lady Jean, they asked Houdini and his wife, Bess, to come and stay with them for a little vacation for a few days. And, you know, they were good buds and everything like that. So, okay, they went and stayed with the Doyles. And while they were there, Lady Jean, Arthur Conan Doyle's wife, she asked Houdini if he would like it if she would try to contact his mother.
Okay.
Now, Houdini was actually on board with this. Because, like I said, yeah, he was skeptical. Yeah, he was debunking. But he really wanted somebody to be able
to contact,
contact his mother.
Right.
Because he had loved her so much.
Right.
And Lady Jean, you know, Lady Jean and Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, they were his best friends. I mean, you know. So, of course, he was going to let... And he even said, like, before this happened, he's like, you know, I'm going to keep an open mind about this. I'm really hoping that she'll finally be able to come through for me and all this other kind of stuff. Okay, so they had a seance at Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's house, and Lady Jean was the medium. Now, almost immediately, Lady Jean went into a trance, okay? And then she had all this, she did a lot of automatic writing type of stuff, and she started writing on the piece of paper, and it was supposedly from Houdini's mother, Cecilia.
Okay.
Now, most of the stuff she wrote quite a lot.
Yeah.
But most of the stuff she wrote was just kind of the kind of stuff that mediums usually tell you. It's like, I'm so happy to be able to talk to you.
Really general
stuff. Aren't the Conan Doyles awesome for letting, you know, for letting this happen and all this other kind of stuff. And, you know, thank you, and all this other stuff. I, you know, it's wonderful where I am. I'm in heaven. It's so wonderful to talk to you and stuff like that. Now, Houdini started getting a little upset about this. And Conan Doyle said, why don't you ask if your mother can read your mind? So Houdini said, okay. And so then... So they asked that, you know, can you read my mind? And and through Lady Jean, he said, yes, she could. And that would be awesome. So then she started writing even more, but it wasn't anything substantive, really.
Right.
You know, it was just the same kind of stuff.
Like you do in a horoscope.
Yeah, like it was like a horoscope. So at the end of the seance, Houdini was kind of bummed out. And the reasons he was bummed out were many. One, the day of the seance was his mother's birthday.
Okay.
She had not mentioned this.
Ah, yeah.
Second, on the piece of paper where Lady Jean had done the automatic writing, she had made a cross, like a Christian cross.
Yeah.
Houdini's mother was Jewish.
Jewish, yeah.
She would not have made a cross.
Right.
Probably the most damning was that Houdini's mother could not write English.
Okay, yeah.
In fact, she could barely read or write at all.
Okay, yeah.
And she could only speak broken English.
Right.
You know, and obviously all the stuff that was written in perfect English. Right. You know, he was like, my mother couldn't speak English. So, and
well,
also...
Well, she learned a lot in heaven, didn't she?
Yeah, I guess so. Now, because Houdini felt bad about this, now also when he had asked if his mother could read his mind, he had deliberately thought of a friend of his whose name was Powell. And that's what he had been thinking. So that's, he said, if it was really my mother, she would have come up with that.
Right.
If she knew what I was thinking. Now, it was weird though, because after the seance, Houdini wrote the word Powell on a piece of paper. He's like, that's what I was thinking. Now, Arthur Conan Doyle, coincidentally, a friend of Doyle's named Powell, it was a different guy,
yeah,
had died 3 days before.
Huh.
So he thought
right.
that Harry was using his medium powers.
Okay, yeah.
You know what I mean? He's like, oh my God, he knew about my friend that died. Woo.
Right, yeah.
But it was a different guy he was right. talking about. Now, Houdini did not really want to be, I mean, they were still his friends, so he didn't want to shit on them.
Right, yeah.
And ruin the vacation and say all this stuff. It's like, that was not my mother.
Yeah.
So they finished out the visit, you know, and then the Doyles went, you know, went away and stuff like that. And Houdini actually waited quite a long time before he came out and said, you know, that was not my mother.
Right.
You know, they didn't contact my mother. Now, he didn't necessarily think that they were trying to fuck with him.
Right.
Because they were his friends.
Right.
But he thought that they had deluded themselves so much that
into
believing it that they actually thought they were talking to his mother. Because okay. he didn't want to believe that they
were trying to fool him.
Or were trying to fool him deliberately.
Right.
Like, you know, they were nice people.
Right.
He just thought they were self-deluded. But, you know, in 1922, like, this was probably about 6 months after the seance, 6 months or more, you know, he did come out and make a public statement saying, you know, that was not my mother. And he said yeah. about the
and
English
Doyle
and about the cross.
Pissed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the Doyles were very mad. They thought that Houdini was being deliberately blind.
Yeah.
That he didn't want to see it, you know, and all this other stuff. Whereas Houdini felt that, you know, they were the ones that were being right. blind because they were like, you know, obviously, you know, that wasn't. So that was kind of, so their friendship was kind of tense. And then, you know, the whole thing with Marjorie happened and Arthur Conan Doyle was a huge advocate of Marjorie, you know.
Yeah, the bobber chick.
The naked medium.
Yeah, naked.
The naked medium. And he was very, very upset that Houdini had discredited her so much. So that was kind of the end of their friendship. And it was kind of sad because after Houdini died, Bess found a bunch of books on spiritualism, like in his stuff that he had been wanting to give to Arthur Conan Doyle. And she tried to give them to him. And he said, I don't think that he would have wanted me to have them because they ended up on such a bad note.
Okay.
So that was kind of a sad story. Now, Houdini, obviously, he died in 1926 on Halloween mm-hmm. after a misaimed punch to the stomach, which he wasn't prepared for.
Yeah, I remember that story.
Because he used to go around saying, because he had those, you know, abs and everything, yeah, he used to, yeah, punch me in the stomach.
Punch me in the stomach, yeah. Dude punched him.
A dude punched
ready.
Him when he wasn't ready.
Yeah.
And it ended up rupturing his appendix, and he got sepsis, and he died.
Yeah.
Now, before he died, like I said, he had been, you know, hoping that there was some legitimacy to this whole talking to the dead type of thing. So before he died, he had actually set up with a bunch of his friends, like various codes, you know, so whoever dies first, you know, we're going to try and contact each other. Now, probably the most famous of these codes he had established with his wife, Bess. And he had set it up with her. He said, now, if I die first, you know, and I'm going to try and contact you, this is what I'm going to say. And it was a code between them. So for a year or two after Houdini died, Bess first started doing kind of seances or trying to talk to him on her own. She, you know, every Sunday she had a little shrine to him with a candle and a picture and stuff. And she would try to talk to him, but she couldn't hear anything. She couldn't hear him. And then she got to a point where she was going to offer $10,000 to any medium that could bring her a message from him that was legitimately from him. It was this code that they had worked out. Now, no one could do that. She kept getting a bunch of cranks and stuff like that. But then in 1928, there was this medium named Arthur Ford. And he contacted Bess and said that Houdini's mother had come to him. And he gave Houdini's mother's last word, forgive.
Huh.
He said that that's what it was.
Wow.
So that kind of impressed her.
Yeah.
Now, she did say that in the message that Cecilia, Houdini's mother, had apparently given to Ford, that she had called him Harry. Now, that wasn't his name. His name was Eric.
Okay.
And that's what his mother had always called him, because that was his real name. So she thought that was a little sketchy. But, you know, the idea that he had gotten the word impressed her. So they got in touch. Now, they had a seance in 1929, and allegedly, Arthur Ford produced the code that Houdini and Bess had worked out.
Wow.
This code, when it was, you know, uncoded, the message was, Rosabelle, believe. Rosabelle was their favorite song. Now, so that wasn't the only message, which probably would have been easy to work out.
Right.
The word believe was coded. And the code was kind of a code that Houdini and Bess had worked out when, you know, back in the old days, they used to do a telepathy act on stage. And they had this code worked out where particular words, you know, were signifiers of particular letters.
Right.
So, you know, the message that he actually gave was the correct coded one. And when it was decoded, it said, Rosabelle, believe. The actual message that he gave was actually, Rosabelle, answer, tell, pray, answer, look, tell, answer, tell. See, these words, answer, tell, pray, those were letters.
Okay.
So answer was B,
right,
tell was E, you know, so she was really impressed and stoked, right? Because she thought Houdini contacted her.
Right.
A couple of years after he died.
Giving codes.
Yeah. And she actually published, you know, an ad in the paper that said, he gave me the code. Right. It's correct. Houdini has spoken to me.
Right.
But here's the thing. This is where the whole thing gets kind of sketchy. Now, only a couple of days after the seance and after she said, yes, Houdini has talked to me and yes, I got the code, the skeptics came out and said, one, that their code maybe wasn't as unknown as she thought because there had been a biography of Houdini that had come out like a year or two before and that code had been detailed in there.
Oh,
so someone could have figured it out.
Right. The code was detailed, but the code was given? Or
see,
just outlined?
See, that's the thing. It was kind of outlined. So it was possible.
Was it a common code?
I don't think it would have been. I don't know. It's like, I don't know how hard it would have been for someone to figure it out. But see, the thing is, the initial thing that got her interested in the medium Arthur Ford was because of him saying that he had talked to Houdini's mother and Houdini's mother had said the word forgive. But that could have leaked. And actually, some people say it did.
Right.
That there was an interview or that had been published that Houdini had been waiting to hear that word.
Right.
So it wasn't like that was totally unknown.
Right.
So that could have been faked.
Dude just wanted to make his $10,000.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, a little less. Now, some people said, like, a tabloid article came out a couple days after the seance. And it made the allegation that Arthur Ford and Bess Houdini had collaborated on this. Like, he had bought the code off her or something like that. And they were doing it as, like, a publicity stunt.
Right. That crossed my mind, too.
However,
to sell Houdini merchandise or to do some kind of show, maybe revive another guy's career.
Right. But the thing is,
She wasn't dating Ford, was she?
Not that anyone ever suggested. I don't think anyone's ever suggested that.
All right.
Now, she got kind of upset about that, and she published a letter in the paper, and she said, you know, she's like, if I had just wanted publicity, I could have done it years ago. She's like, I've been getting messages that were supposedly from Houdini from mediums all over the world. She's like, I could have publicized some of that if I really wanted it.
Right.
And, you know, and she said, I don't she's like, I'm not going back on the stage. I'm not going on a lecture tour. She was older then. Mm. And she's like, and I don't need the money. It's like Houdini had lots of money, left her all his money. Mm. And, she, you know, she said, I'm quite comfortable. And, you know, so she was kind of offended, I think, that people would suggest that. Mm. Now, later on, she would renounce Arthur Ford.
How so?
And say, and I think it was only a year or two later, she said, you know, that it didn't happen like that, or he didn't give me the code, or she later said, no one has ever given me the code. Well, so I don't know if she found out that Ford had fooled her.
Right. Did he get the $10,000?
No.
Okay.
He never did. But the thing is, Bess never really gave up hope of hearing from him, from Houdini. I mean, quite famously, for 10 years after he died, on Halloween night, she would have a seance and try to get in contact with him. And she never did. And actually, and I actually played a little bit of that final recording at the beginning of the show, if you want to listen to it. That was from the final seance in 1936, where she put the candle out and she said she wasn't going to try anymore. And her famous quote at the time was, 10 years is long enough to wait for any man. She said she hadn't heard from him in 10 years and so she thought she wasn't
going to. That's odd that she said that he gave the code and then later.
And then later recanted it.
Yeah.
They're not really sure what the deal with that was.
Right.
Like, I don't know if, I mean, most of the stuff she said about why she wouldn't have conspired with him, you know, it made sense. If she'd wanted publicity, she could have gotten it. She didn't need the money.
Yeah.
And Ford never got the money. She never paid him that $10,000. So, I don't know. Like I said, I don't know if later on she found out that he had figured out the code, you know, by some underhanded means and she was maybe too embarrassed.
Right. Okay.
But she did recant later on and she said,
it wasn't
no,
made public why really.
Or what not the really. Were. Yeah. Okay. Like I said, there was a lot of kind of controversy surrounding it.
Okay.
But, you know, so after 10 years, you know,
I'll tell you what though, man, Houdini, he was an iron-willed little dude.
Yeah.
I mean, they'd lock him in boxes and throw him off of bridges and everything like that. And
he was they used to put him in those big milk cans and like lock him all up. It was like full of water and shit like that.
And he was like super physically fit back in a time when dudes didn't work out and everything. You know, he was pretty cool.
I mean, and he was super flexible. He could get out of anything. Like really I said, that was one of his most famous things. He could get up. He could get out of any cell. And he had that Chinese water torture cell, the tank where he would like hang upside down and get out of there.
I would like to have seen one of his acts live. That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
he seemed like a good dude.
Yeah.
And, but actually, like I said, you know, Bess herself died in 1943.
Right.
Sadly, never heard again from Houdini. But, the tradition lives on.
Okay.
As magicians groups all over the world, every Halloween, they have a seance and try to contact Houdini. Not seriously, obviously, but it's just kind of a ritualistic kind of fun thing they do. And, they try to talk to him. But, you know, so that's all of that, I guess. But it's kind of, what?
Meanwhile.
Oh, he's making funny gestures. Anyway, okay, so, I think I covered everything I wanted to cover. I hope I didn't forget anything. I have like 12 pages of notes in front of me.
Yeah.
But, okay, so hopefully you found that interesting and,
anything else about Houdini?
That's not it. Well, not at the moment.
Not at the moment.
Well, you already got me started on the ending
shit.
Now
I want
shit
some Houdini merchandise.
Well, now you want Houdini merchandise?
Yeah.
You think I should make a Houdini shirt? Am I allowed to do that?
I don't know.
I'm going to look that up.
Yeah, okay. Cool.
I don't know. It wasn't that long ago.
All right.
Speaking of shirts, we still have those 5 shirts at Zazzle.com/13 o'clock. So if you want to go check those out, still got the same 5 designs. Maybe I'll do a Houdini one if I'm allowed.
Yeah.
I doubt I'm allowed, but I'll see. And if you like our show, please subscribe to our YouTube show or listen to us on Project Entertainment Network or go to the Project Entertainment Network Patreon page and throw them a buck or two. Also, you can follow us on Twitter at 13 o'clock podcast and go like our Facebook page, 13 o'clock podcast. All the regular stuff I say at the end, you know how it goes.
Blah, blah, blah.
Blah, blah, blah. Hey, okay. Shut up, man. He's such a dick, I swear. Nah, I love you. It's okay.
Love you too, babe.
Aw. Okay. See? Okay. All right. So be sure to tune in next Tuesday. We have no idea what the topic will be because we don't decide until like the day before because we're totally disorganized. But, you know, I'm sure it'll be interesting. Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know.
It'll be all right.
It'll be all right.
Yeah, it'll be all right.
All right. All right. See you guys next Tuesday. Bye.
This has been an exclusive presentation of the Project Entertainment Network.